Good afternoon, everyone. This is Sandy Barua from the Detroit Regional Chamber, and welcome to yet another Detroit Regional Chamber Teletown Hall. We so appreciate the value of your time and hope that you find these sessions valuable to you. All of these sessions are recorded and available for download after the session is concluded. You can find this session along with our other sessions at the Chamber's website, which is DetroitChamber.com/COVID-19. There is also a business resource site at that address, which has a lot of valuable information and a lot of links to really valuable tools. So without further ado, I am very pleased to welcome our special guest today. We're pleased to have Representative Fred Upton, who represents Michigan's 6th District. Upton has been a representative from Michigan since 1993, and prior to that, he worked in Washington both as a congressional staffer and an aide to the Reagan White House. Fred, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Nice to be with you and your many guests that are there. It's a very valuable tool, this sharing of information, and I just want to confirm that all of us in our delegation, from the governor, our senators, all of us in the congressional delegation, we're working together as we should.
Well, and you are you're the dean now of our delegation, and are serving in that role incredibly well. And we're so grateful for your longstanding public service and especially the role that you are playing now. Fred, give us a little bit of a sense of what things are like in Washington. I know you aren't physically there, but you are active. The Congress is active, even as you're working remotely. Kind of what's on Congress's agenda now after the big Paycheck Protection and CARES Act was enacted just literally a few days ago?
Well, a couple things. First of all of us, I think, are working from our home kitchens. I am. We closed our office actually before this whole thing started, our two offices here in Michigan and back in D.C. as well. So we're all working multiple phone lines. I'm glad I kept my hard line. Thank you, AT&T. But I've got my cell. I've got my, you know, it's like Michael Patrick Shields, right? I got my AT&T Dreamline here and TV in the kitchen and all of that. We're all working early to late. We're chatting with each other and within our delegation, that is for sure. We all have different ideas where we can work in a, you know, we have a divided government, so the only way to get things done is to work together, and we are doing that. I've heard from the governor directly a couple times today, and her office as well, as addition to our delegation, on just a host of issues. In terms of what we're doing today, it was clear from the start. Remember, the CARES program passed only a week and a half ago, and the PPP program, Paycheck Protection Plan, really went into play only last Friday and through the weekend. So we're like day four. We're all having conference calls. I was on almost a two-hour conference call this morning with the vice president, with Mnuchin, with Deborah Birx, Tony Fauci, we had the Mark Meadows, who's the new chief of staff for the president, was on as well. A couple things that I'll reference. The PPP program, $350 billion initially, is going to run out of money pretty quick. Already just in day four, 3,500 lenders from around the country have put out, I think they've got 30,000 authorized users that are making loans over here, Berrien County, where I live. Yesterday, just a couple, a handful of small credit, well, maybe not small, but credit unions and community bankers have made over 500 loans, $125 million, trying to keep these small businesses in play, and they're going to double that today. There's real glitches in the program, we know. I've been on a couple conference calls with our Michigan Bankers Association. They're supposed to be, 90% of them, we're told, are going to be resolved today. They've got some new uploads that will be done by close of business today, which ought to help with some of these glitches. So that's a good thing. But bottom line is, we're going to run out of money. It's first come, first serve. So that $350 billion already the vice president said today when we started the call at 10:30, I think he said that $90 billion had already been put out the door. So you can tell by early next week, the sock will be dry. The president yesterday came out with a request for $250 billion more. Seemed as though he had an agreement with Mitch McConnell, with Nancy Pelosi, leaders on both sides of the aisle. And overnight now it's grown to the proposal now is a couple things: more money for the states, $150 billion, I think, state and local communities, $100 billion for our hospitals. And that's a real demand right now. Of course, just about every hospital in the country scooted out their surgical patients to get ready for this. So their revenue stream is not anywhere close to what it was before. And the proposal that the speaker has made, Speaker Pelosi, is to increase the food stamps or SNAP program by 15%. So all of a sudden, this has gone from $250 billion to about half a trillion, and I'm not sure where it's going to play. It all has, since we're all home, it has to be done by unanimous consent. So I don't know the Senate is going to take this up tomorrow. So it'll be turn on C-SPAN, watch what happens, because whatever they do, then the House will be next. We're in a session on Friday pro forma. But again, it'll have to be done by unanimous consent. And just hearing members in conference calls, it's going to be hard to get that larger package through. Yes, I think it would be part of an ultimate package later on, but to do it this week will cause some consternation with some of my colleagues for sure. So stay tuned in terms of what happens there. One of the provisions that I'm normally, this would be an hour conference call. Let me just conclude by saying, working with our hospital providers, so they've lost, in essence, their revenue stream has gone to zero and has for a couple weeks. And your side of the state, Sandy, is much harder hit than over here, although our numbers are starting to creep up with positive cases and with deaths. We had a number in Kalamazoo, I know, yesterday. But our hospital provider, their revenue stream is zero. So what was in this last package that the president signed enabled hospitals to reach back, that they could go to CMS, that's Medicare, that they could reach back and get the 6 months of Medicare payments and get them day one. And I think you're going to look at us changing those loans to grants, as we did with the PPP program in one of these next elements, one of these next bills. So that's vital that we keep the revenue coming to the hospitals, because otherwise, not only do you have big cases of health workers testing positive, but you also have potential layoff notices as well. So you've got to make sure that revenue stream is there. So with that, let me stop and then we have a discussion and take some questions.
Yeah, no, thank you, Congressman. So you mentioned that some of your colleagues might be a little hesitant to move forward with this 250 or potentially half a trillion dollar additional package. Is this members who might be concerned about, a deficit, just the amount of money we're spending on this crisis? What are some of the issues that some of your colleagues might express some concern about?
Well, my sense is, we have rules in the House. First of all, we have to be there to vote. So, and to change the rules, you got to have a vote. But second, it all has to be done by unanimous consent since we're at home. And so when we've never ever passed a bill that was $2.2 trillion. No single bill has ever been that much, let alone happened on a voice vote where one member, and this is actually in the House as well as in the Senate, one member can demand successfully a recorded vote. So it just takes one to put their hand up. And so
well,
that has
that's
to
what
get
happened a week and a half ago, right?
That's right. That's right. I drove back to make sure we had a quorum. A vote was still demanded, but because no one but the speaker, acting speaker, counted, and we had more than a quorum that was there. I actually counted 230 members that were there. You need 200. We needed 215. So only Tom Massey, that's who it was, demanded the vote, and only he stood, and therefore the vote was not accomplished. But it's, you only need 20 or 30 members to stand, and you only need one in the Senate to demand a recorded vote. So that's why it has to, in essence, be deemed it passed. And you get, in essence, a handshake between Schumer and McConnell to get it done with nobody objecting.
Well, having Leader McConnell in agreement with the president, I think that's a huge hurdle to this next package, because he was initially skeptical about a C4 package.
Well, that's right. But it's very clear. I mean, again, when you look at the numbers, here we are the fourth day of approvals by our local lenders. And it was smart to have this program not managed by SBA, really, but really by the local lenders who understand and have a relationship with the small businesses. It was smart to have those folks with an existing relationship with their small business to actually parlay the money out. But it's pretty clear after 4 days, the money's going to be gone. I mean, it was just, you know, we're trying to help the employees. I mean, you think about the restaurants, you think about, you know, the small builders, this will apply to the self-employed here as well. That spigot opens up on Friday, and the money may all be gone by Friday, which means that there's got to be more money that's infused in this to make sure that paychecks are still there for these small business employees that otherwise, well, those businesses may never reopen and will never get this economy moving back in the right direction again.
Congressman, as we look across the state of Michigan, we see different parts of the state being impacted by this COVID-19 virus differently. Tell us what's happening in your state. I know you lost someone who you knew and had a lot of respect for personally.
Well, I did. And Sandy, it's still Fred. So you, we, you know, all of our districts set up a little bit differently, but I sat down with our health providers, our big hospitals over here, our Lakeland, Spectrum, and Bronson, and Borges. They each have about 600 physicians each, pretty sizable as it relates to Southwest Michigan. Those are the three giants, and then they have a pretty much an association with the smaller hospitals, whether they be in Three Rivers or Plainwell or Allegan or Niles. You know, they all set up, they all have command rooms. They work, you know, for a couple weeks getting ready for this. And we have really good county health officers here who have participated in teletown meetings in Kalamazoo, as well as I did one yesterday in Barry, and one or two in Kalamazoo last week. You know, our sheriffs are linked together. We're getting information with the governor's office in terms of preparations. In terms of cases, and you know, for Berrien, they went up 20. So the Berrien County is about 160,000 people that live in this county. Our positive numbers went up by 25% from Sunday to Monday. We've had two deaths. So we have 60-some positive test cases. We had, tragically, we had Sandy Patty, who is a singer, of course. She sang at a concert at Andrews University down in Berrien Springs in early March. She tested positive, and some of the people that around her were positive as well. And we've had five deaths in Kalamazoo County, and they're at about 60 positive cases. You know, testing has been an issue, getting the PPE. We've had a couple of different employers, like we've seen on your side of the state with GM and Ford coming to the rescue. And we've had a couple of employers. Western Michigan University has converted one of their 3D printers to making masks. We've had small business outreach. We've done a lot of conference calls with small businesses and others, helping people go through the routine of figuring out how to work these forms for the PPE. So it's, and as I, you know, we're stay at home, I'm working out in my kitchen, people are wearing masks on the street, there's real distancing here. I've had to go to the store a couple of times, grocery store. They've installed shields now for the clerks. We're all wearing masks. actually a suggestion I made to the governor this morning was that to protect our folks really on the front line, like our grocery clerks and others, maybe we ought to follow the same line what California has done, requiring that customers actually have a mask. Now, maybe not a N95 mask, but a mask that you can make yourself or they can provide that are obviously fairly cheap, but provide that protection that the CDC has asked us to do, particularly when we're outside of our homes. But the only way to flatten this curve, and the numbers are showing this, is for us to stay in and lock the virus out. So there's been pretty good social distancing, I would say, over on this side of the state. We have Dial-A-Ride, but we have one major bus system in Kalamazoo. Otherwise, most people either walk or drive, but the traffic counts are way down. There's very little traffic on the streets or downtown as well, and people are being very attentive to making sure that they've got the mask and staying apart from each other. So it's been a pretty good attitude, which I know has been most productive in keeping these, trying to flatten the curve.
Great. Fred, let me turn it over to Brad Williams, our Vice President of Government Affairs. He's been monitoring the chat room. Brad, questions from our audience.
Yeah, thanks, Sandy. And thank you, Fred, for everything you're doing on behalf of Michiganders. I appreciate all the work that you and your colleagues are putting in. We've had a lot of folks curious about the state of the state budget. And I know in the last financial crisis, a lot of the stimulus bill had direct aid to state governments because, of course, state governments can't deficit spend. Can you talk about that and efforts to help state governments, state and local governments, shore up their own fiscal picture? Because, of course, we're looking at pretty significant potential deficits in state spending as well.
Well, we do, and for a lot of reasons. I mean, the April 15th tax deadline has been moved back. It's now, what, July, I think? Yeah, I think it corresponds to the federal level. You look at sales tax revenue, you look at gas tax revenue, all of those are going to be declining by a rather substantial amount, which impacts the local, you know, the revenue sharing payments to our local cities. So you're going to see, and I've heard from the National League of Cities, I've heard, again, our governor has been very active with other governors as well. I think they had a conference call earlier today as well. I think this phase four, so there was some money that was in the last package, phase three, but it's not going to be enough. You're going to see a phase four include probably in the neighborhood of about $150 billion, which is what Pelosi has now asked for in this next punch that she'd like the Senate to take up tomorrow to try and backfill some of the loss of revenue to the states. At the end, I think you'll see the president support something like that. I don't know that he's cited a specific number because, after all, we're still literally the first week of watching phase three kick in. But as we see the specifics on what the shortfalls are going to be, I saw that Mayor Duggan on DetroitNews.com or MLive earlier today was saying that he thought the city of Detroit was going to have a $100 million deficit. Because of this, we're going to need to step up and help to try and keep our cities safe and moving forward in the days ahead. So I've heard from a number of our state reps and state senators about this, asking for some help. It's been, I would consider it bipartisan, and I think we'll be listening with real ears as to how this proceeds.
Well, I think to that end, we have another question about what is the long-term fiscal implications for the federal government for this? Of course, $2.2 trillion is nothing to sneeze at, and certainly the price tag is going to grow. And Sandy asked about, you know, some of your colleagues caution about spending more money, but you know, what is your thought on what this does to the overall fiscal picture of the federal government, and what steps are we going to have to take in the future to pay for this? Is this going to require, you know, increased revenue from the taxpayers in the future, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's probably too early to say exactly how it'll go. I know, you know, as Sandy said at the beginning, I worked for President Reagan a long time ago, and I've always believed in balanced budgets, but you know, it's times like these that you're just not going to have it. I mean, this is another World War II. This is something that, you know, we have to have our country survive, and thank goodness we have the resources, the ability to do what we're doing to try and bring our government, our nation back to where we want it to be. So in the short term, it's going to be all hands on deck. We're going to have to spend what it takes to help our businesses and their employees look out for the future of our country. And, you know, time will tell as to how we pay for this at the end of the day. And those discussions will start in earnest once we have the therapeutics, once we have a vaccine, so that people know that we can be safe as we go about the normal routine that we've always used to have and want to return. But so unclear, don't have an answer, I guess, is the right question at this point.
Right. Thank you. You know, you have been, I think, a real champion for bipartisanship. I know you were a leader in the Problem Solvers Caucus, and we have a question in here, you know, acknowledging the work you did with Alyssa Slotkin to seek FDA approval of a new method of cleansing PPE. Do you think this will maybe usher in a new era of bipartisanship? Has this maybe, I think this crisis is altering a lot of things permanently. Has this maybe altered the perception of bipartisanship permanently? Do you have hope that there may be some good things that come out of this?
Well, you know what? I've always been an optimist. And the Problem Solvers Caucus and Debbie Dingell and I were there on stage last year talking a lot about it. She and I are two vice chairs of the Problem Solvers Caucus. Alyssa Slotkin is a member, so is Paul Mitchell. I would say it's probably the best hour of the week that I have when we're in session. We meet for an hour every week. We talk about issues that we're involved in, how we can work together. We leave our partisan labels at the door. We had a conference call. We've had two this week, one with Steve Scalise, the Republican whip. I would expect that we'll probably have Steny Hoyer or Jim Clyburn on in the next week or so. I'm actually missing another conference call with them today that's going on as we all work together to see what we can do. But specifically what Alyssa Slotkin, who my colleague from East Lansing, had, I thought, a wonderful idea, is we all scramble, we all compete with other states to get this PPE, personal protection equipment, our masks, our gowns, et cetera, for our providers and first responders. She has been working with Michigan State University, who has designed a system that would actually be able to reuse these by cleansing them through a heat treatment. And she worked with Michigan State over the weekend. It has to be FDA approved. That's more than, you know, which are otherwise designed as single use, the N95. So they've worked on a system that they think will meet the specs. They submitted it last night to the FDA. I've been in touch with the FDA a couple times today, as so has she. I use my committee connections. I used to chair the Energy and Commerce Committee. So we have a brilliant staff, and they helped us connect with the FDA, literally the chairman's office. And we're hoping to get a decision from the FDA relative to the sanctity of this design, literally within the next 24 to 48 hours, so that we can actually see this implemented. And instead of, you know, seeking these products from Malaysia and China and, you know, wherever else they're coming from, that we can actually reuse those. I've looked at the proposal. It's 15 pages long. I'd like to think that we can get that proposal done, and it'll be a real credit to not only the Problem Solvers, but certainly for just looking outside the box of how we can help people here in Michigan. And we're working together on a host of fronts. We're working on a system where we can vote remotely so that we don't have to go back in times of emergency. As you know, we lost a very talented state rep who passed away with this. We've got another one that's tested positive, I know, in Michigan as well. You have those same concerns if when Congress comes back. We have 535 people. There's a lot of folks over 60 years and with different conditions that are there. We've all come from different parts of the district. How do you get of the country? How do you get people on planes from the West Coast? I mean, all these different issues that surface in times like these, might it be better to caucus and be able to vote from your kitchen, knowing that it's only a temporary time? And our caucus is working on some proposals. Our problem solvers caucus is working on some proposals there. But, you know, the deficit, I mean, we were the ones responsible for reopening up the government a year ago when it shut down for 35 days. We passed a major ag immigration bill that I had a hand in. Paul Mitchell did a great job on that, too. I think pretty much all of us voted for it to get it done, setting the stage for immigration reform, a long-term issue that certainly we have to deal with. So it's been an important part of my life. And frankly, it's what my constituents, I think, would prefer. You know, you got your hardcore on both sides, but most people don't care if you have an R or a D next to your name. They want the job done. They want you to take the good ideas and work together to get things done. And we have no choice. With divided government, that's the only way to get a bill across the dock to get it done.
Well, thank you. And I'll take this opportunity to plug two people you mentioned. Paul Mitchell is going to be our guest on the Teletown Hall on Friday morning at 10:30. And Alyssa Slotkin is going to be with us next week. The exact day slips my memory, but you'll be able to find those at the website, detroitchamber.com/COVID-19. And I have one last question for you, Fred, and then I will hand it back to Sandy because I know we are running short on time. There are a handful of questions in here about the status of nonprofits in the CARES Act. And I know our friends at the U.S. Chamber have been relentless in hitting you on the status of 501c6s under Paycheck Protection. So I will not hit you on that. But there is a question about larger nonprofits who are exceed 500 employees and their ability to apply under this. And is there any thought to allowing larger nonprofits to get some relief under SBA programs?
I think that it's going to be pretty hard to do. The cap is the traditional number that small businesses are viewed at, 500 employees. They're the ones that actually run the 7A program, which is what PPP is working under. We added the self-employed to that. Those doors applications open up on Friday and a couple of other things. But I think it'll be knowing that this money is going to be gone and the second tranche will be gone fairly quickly too. I think it's going to be pretty hard to go above 500 at least for this particular program. Now there's some other things that, you know, for the Marriott, you know, the for-profit business, the Marriott's, the Boeing's, you know, obviously the airlines had their own little special, I'll call it a carve out that was there. But I think it's going to be hard at this point, but we'll see. You know, we're all going to come back at some point. We're all going to come back. We've got all these ideas. We're hearing from our constituents, and we'll see how this thing gets put together like a jigsaw puzzle at the end for phase four.
Great. Thank you. And I've been notified that Congresswoman Slotkin is going to be with us on Monday at 1 p.m. So I will hand it back to you, Sandy.
Great. Brad, thank you so much. Fred, we know that you are actually missing an Energy and Commerce Committee conference call regarding this next phase of the federal assistance. So we're going to let you get back to that. Thank you for stepping away from that meeting to be with us at the Detroit Regional Chamber. My very best to you, Fred, and Amy, and the rest of the family. Continue to be safe, and thank you so much for your public service. Really appreciate it.
Well, God bless you all. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Fred. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take care.